even then I knew this is what I had to do. I knew I had to take this step. So when it didn't work out, I drew upon my spiritual, should we say, bank account and withdrew all the faith and all the trust in the universe and all the self, sense of self that I'd cultivated and went forward. And then, you know, I saw something remarkable happen, which was that what was needed more than anything else was for me to be what I've come to call a faith keeper.
You're tuned into Compassionate Las Vegas, the podcast where compassion inspires action. Together, we're building a world centered in understanding, empathy, and courageous action, starting right here in the heart of Southern Nevada. We're taking the principle of do unto others as you would have them do unto you to heart. Now, let's welcome a man committed to fostering compassion in every corner of our city, a beacon of compassion in Las Vegas, your host, Will Rucker.
Welcome to Compassionate Las Vegas, the podcast. I'm Will Rucker, and I want to thank you for tuning in to today's episode. I'm really excited about this conversation and about introducing you to this individual who actually is more of a reintroduction because he's done some incredible things across the globe, and you've probably heard about them, but maybe just not in this context. So with that, I would like to welcome to the podcast none other than David Gershon. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness. So as I mentioned, I'm super excited to speak with you today and to talk about what you're working on right now. But before we even get into all of that wonderful content, I want people to hear about exactly who you are and kind of what brought you to this moment.
Is that a question now for me? I guess
that
sounds
for
like
you.
It.
Yes, it
is. Yeah. An introduction. So who am I and how did I get here? That is a good question. Not an easy answer. So I would say how I got here is because I seem to be walking the path less traveled. And that is to say, I ask questions that maybe others aren't asking. Most people who want to change the world ask the question, what's wrong and how do I fix it? And then they come up with answers, some good, some not so good. And we'll talk about how that kind of change might work. And but my path has been asking not questions about what's wrong, but what's possible and how do we create it? So my path has been built around my imagination and around my dreams and about the dreams that I feel are possible for humanity, because I operate at that level planetarily. And when I go on that journey, asking those questions, I get some really interesting possibilities. And there really are no constraints other than the ones that I generate. One of the things in our empowerment worldview we talk about is the shift from pathology, which is the exploration of what's not working and how to fix it, and to vision, which is what's possible and how to create it. So this is very much integrated into my everything that I do and all the initiatives that I've created. Over the course of time, I have done a number of things. You kind of alluded to one of the big ones, which was the first Earth Run, where we passed a torch of peace around the world in 1986 as part of the International Year of Peace, as a way to really start to transform the energies on the planet from nuclear annihilation to a new vision of how we might cooperate for the common good and come together and create peace on Earth. And that was quite successful.
And David, you say that so casually. Oh, you know, we did a, yes, a Earth Run, like it's just some minor thing, but you literally carried a flame across the globe, including in aircraft, right? That's remarkable.
Well, this is true. I mean, it's quite actually a story. I'm just giving you the high points, but we could unpack it because there's so many elements to it. But 1 billion people witnessed it through the media, and 62 countries, 45 leaders of the world, and 25 million people. And here's the most kind of mind-blowing part. Wherever the torch of peace went, all war stopped and the world was united as one. And that became my inspiration and made me much more dangerous than I was before, because now I am a firm believer that anything is possible. And therefore, I'm going after things that might seem impossible to many. So that's one part of my bio. There's many more things that I could say. What happened in the 40 something years thereafter? Some of that may come out in this conversation.
Wow. And when you said 40 something years after, that hit me kind of hard, because it doesn't feel like 40 years ago. It at least for me, it doesn't. And so, wow. One thing I just wanted to highlight is that idea of the flame, because often in compassion circles, we talk about self-compassion and self-care, and we use the phrase, and I love that you're picking up a cup at this moment, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Nice.
And what I love about the imagery of the flame is it doesn't matter how many times you light from that flame, the original source is present. It doesn't matter if it's a huge candle or just a tiny flicker, that flame is capable of illuminating another flame. And that's what I see you doing. You're taking things that could be so small and spreading them out across so many different individuals. And I think that may be how you create social change. So we'll kind of dive into that. But before we do, thank you for sharing kind of a little background and just getting folks acquainted. I always want folks to know who's on here so they stay till the end.
I hope you stay to the end, my friends. I hope this will be very helpful to you in your journeys as well as inspirational.
Absolutely. So if you haven't already, go ahead and hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment and share and do all the social media things, because folks need to hear this. With that in mind, can you set a foundation for us with how you define compassion?
You know, I've never defined compassion. So this is a good moment for me. I've often heard it defined as wisdom plus love. And I like that definition. And I would also say what I like about compassion is that it is an active state of consciousness. It is not passive. It demands something of you toward another person or towards a situation in the world. So compassion to me is a powerful energy, frequency, you might call it. It's a very high frequency. I think it's a powerful idea. It's amazing that you're building a city vision around the idea of compassion. It's beautiful.
Wisdom plus love. I really, really like that. And I see those as two wings really of the same bird in many cases, which we'll call that bird compassion. So thank you for setting that foundation. How did you come to think about the world in this way and to view compassion as wisdom and love?
I was born with a mission, and that mission has evolved, but it really has boiled down to a very profound idea that has been around for millennium, and that is peace on earth. The Jesus of Nazareth vision was peace on earth. The Hopi nation has been carrying that for the last 1,000 years from person to person, passed on in an oral tradition. And so many different cultures have understood that the organizing principle, the sacred mission of humanity, is to create peace on earth. I would say compassion is a very central idea of what it looks like when we have peace on earth. And we have built 7 attributes in a game we call the peace game that build out what I call the practices that enable peace on earth. So that has been a lot of my journey and the organizing principle for so much of what I do and currently what I'm doing. So let me pause there. I could go into a lot more depth, but that might just be a good way to open up
Yeah. I'm really excited. And I sense that maybe the answer is in these seven practices. But, you know, we use words like compassion and peace and love and just assume that we have kind of a common understanding of what those words mean. And I view words as carriers. They are containers of energy and of information, of spirit in many ways. And so can we just unpack peace for just a moment? Because peace looks different to different people. So what is your vision of peace?
Yes. Well, peace has two different parts to it. The traditional definition of peace for the uninitiated is the absence of war. Most people think of peace as negation of something. And so we want peace means we don't want conflict. We don't want war. We don't want all these tensions in the world. But there's many more dimensions. There's inner peace, which is living in harmony with self, others, and the earth. That's my definition of what inner peace looks like, feels like. There is the building of peace and the creation of peace on earth, which is not a negation, but a constructive construction of something that doesn't exist right now on our planet. And that has been the heart of the work that I've been doing in this peace game and these peace on earth zones, and also in the Peace on Earth by 2030 movement that we have built. And again, it's built on these seven strategies or practices, which I also, interestingly enough, grow out of the experience of the first Earth Run, which in many ways was a beta test of what peace on Earth looked like, because we achieved it for 86 days. And we achieved it by virtue of unconsciously, intuitively applying these seven practices. And so my work now, a good part of my work, is helping cities like Compassionate Las Vegas and others, many cities in the Compassionate Cities movement, among others, are applying these practices and trying to build a community based on these practices. So there's a lot of how associated. A lot of my work is really how. We know the why. We certainly know what we want. Well, we often don't know what we want, but when we ask what's in your heart, what would you like the world to look like? Most people will say peace on earth or some version of that. But the question is, how does that become more than just a dream or a concept or a fantasy for some? How do we do that? That's the question and the work that I have dedicated much of my life to.
I'm going to tap into that spirit of imagination, because you mentioned that at the start of our conversation. And one of the things that has been a personal focus for me in 2024 is getting back into the arts and into creativity and expressing through those platforms. With imagination, I think that there are many people at this time that are afraid to dream, that perhaps they've been so disappointed, perhaps,
right,
that now it's like, oh, we're not going to take this moonshot approach to anything. We're going to play it really safe, which, of course, we know safety isn't safe. But talk a little bit more about imagination and creativity and how you've used that to kind of shape where you're heading. And we will get into the peace games. I want to hear more about that. But before we even get to the peace games, I want to talk about imagination.
Thank you. Well, let me start with why people do not imagine. And I want to build on your point. People don't imagine because they're afraid of being disappointed. People don't dream. They don't go after things often because they're afraid of failing. And so that's what I call building a house on the foot of the mountain. And so, yes, at some level, you won't be disappointed, but on the other level, you'll never be fulfilled. And so the organizing principle of, shall we say, dreaming, creativity, and imagination is fulfillment as a human being, a sense of deep and profound purpose in one's life. And the worst case is that when you go after a dream, you don't achieve it, but you have learned something, you've grown, you've become more than you were before. And if you really have the other quality you need with imagination, which is tenacity or commitment, then you get smarter and you move forward and you get there eventually. I've learned from everything that I've done. Nothing I've ever done has taken much less than 10 years, some longer. The one I'm working on now is kind of my whole life's vision. But it takes time, and that's trial and error. And then the question is, how do you become skillful as a learner, as an iterative learner, when what you go after initially doesn't, you don't achieve it? And to me, that isn't even the issue. The issue is, what if I learned, and if I still hold that vision and it's dear to my heart? Because imagination needs to come out of life purpose. If it comes out of life purpose, then you will stay with it long enough to learn what you need to learn, because that's what your purpose is about. But once you've gone on that journey, then you get there sooner or later, or you don't, if you're not willing to keep learning. I've developed what I call a 70-20-10 rule around learning and why things happen or don't happen. 70% of the reason is because something I have to change in myself. I am not skillful enough in that area. I don't know how to tell my story well. I don't know how to do something essential to that dream. 20% is that I have done everything I know how, but I need to find the right partner or partners, because I can't get there just on my own. And 10% is timing. It's just not the right idea for the right time when we're in, that we're in. With the Earth Run, I tried to do that in 1976, and it was, I was not doing well in all three of those. But later on, I ended up organizing the Olympic torch relay, so now I could check off the box, I know how to do these things. But I still was ahead of myself because I didn't have the right partner and it wasn't the right time. And then 3 years later, it was the height of the Cold War and we needed to do something like this. And we were able to attract UNICEF, United Nations, as a partner. And we had the International Year of Peace in 1986, and all the things came together, the confluence of elements, and we were successful.
And David, I want to just ask really quick before we move past that, because UNICEF was not your original partner.
UNICEF was my original distribution partner, but they weren't my initial funding partner. Mm-hmm. They ended up becoming my funding partner. My initial funding partner was a large bank that said this is a great idea until their risk evaluators saw what we were doing. This, it is way out of our comfort level. We can't fund this. But then UNICEF, because they were already partnered with us around this, moving this forward into the world, it so met their core aspirations, they said, okay, we'll put the money in.
That's great. That makes it, I won't say easy, that's absolutely not the right word, but more feasible when you already have someone at the table. But when you lost that major funding partner, in my life, that would be a major, major blow. And I would have immense difficulty continuing beyond that. But you persevered and you rallied your team throughout that. What was it that allowed you to keep that dream alive and push forward?
You know, I said, Will, earlier, the more aligned your dream is with your purpose for being here, the easier things are. Because really, this why is why I'm here. And I knew that. I've learned it a lot more over the last four decades. But even then, I knew this is what I had to do. I knew I had to take this step. So when it didn't work out, I drew upon my spiritual, should we say, bank account and withdrew all the faith and all the trust in the universe and all the self, sense of self that I'd cultivated and went forward. And then, you know, I saw something remarkable happen, which was that what was needed more than anything else was for me to be what I've come to call a faith keeper in the possible, faith keeper for humanity, and certainly a faith keeper for this particular intention, which is peace on earth. And I still am. But that was the initiation for me.
That's huge. I love even that term, faith keeper. So we've got just a couple minutes left, and I want to hear from you a little bit for our audience around why peace is so important and why you chose the mission of peace by 2030.
Humanity needs to go through the portal of peace, particularly what I like to use the full phrase peace on earth, because it's got a resonance that's more than peace, and it's clearly not about the absence of war. So why does humanity need peace on earth? It's because that is the pathway through which we will evolve to a more enlightened species. We can't get there unless we know how to achieve that fundamental goal. So that's the why of it. And I think how did I end up going on this path? I think I made this choice before I incarnated into this body. This was why I had to come to planet Earth, is I had to help humanity make this transition. And for me, peace on Earth isn't actually the end game. It's the beginning of what some call the golden age, which has been prophesized for some time. And this is the portal through which we must go. And the seven practices of the peace game, to me, feel like the structure of the new world we have to build, the new communities we have to build, new social systems we have to build. So it feels very strategic, very aligned with my purpose, and very germane to where humanity is right now.
Wow. David, there is so much more that I want to get into. I think that this golden age piece is powerful, because thinking of peace as just the beginning, that just made everything within me light up. And I know our listeners and viewers are feeling the same way. So will you join us again for another episode?
It would be my pleasure. And I would add, since this is about Compassion Las Vegas, think of Las Vegas, bless Las Vegas's soul, or any community that anyone's listening from, about what a golden age community would look like. I mean, that's something we've done a lot of deep thinking about. And so a peace on earth zone, which starts to scale these seven practices, starts to build that. So I'd be happy to discuss that or anything else in a future conversation.
Thank you so much. This has been Compassionate Las Vegas. I'm Will Rucker. And as I always remind you, you are not just a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop. And what you do matters. So live compassionately. I'll see you next time.